You've had 2 years as Member of Parliament in Bermondsey and Old Southwark. In that time, what would you say is the achievement that you're proudest of?
I think the help offered to so many people in the constituency. I've been in touch one way or another with almost 30,000 people, half of which is individual casework, people coming here. The vast majority, almost 60% of the people who come in, are about housing one way or another. But then benefits and immigration issues are, you know, not second and third place. That is, you know, there's a board outside this office which has the thank you cards and other bits and pieces on where direct results have been secured. And just being out and about, so obviously this office hosts the weekly surgery every Friday, 4 till 6. Which will happen next Friday, come what may. But there is also regular extra sessions at John Harvard Library, Canada Water Library, Old Kent Road, Asda. The Somali Mosque has been hosting a surgery, tenants associations, community halls, other venues, just to try and increase visibility. And even things like, I know that parents sometimes, you know, see candidates hanging around school gates in the run-up to the last few weeks of an election, but I've been doing school gates for many months, literally just giving out my contact details to make sure where people can come for help when they need it. And I think that's helped build an accessibility and visibility that seems to have gone down very well with local people.
And we all thought we'd entered a world where we had 5-year fixed term parliaments. So what's your biggest regret, or perhaps regret of something you haven't had a chance to achieve because your time's been cut short?
Theresa May has called this election because she knows over the next 2 years the EU negotiations unravel and it will be embarrassing for her and her government. We should have gone full 5 years. That was the expectation, but I'm glad I set targets and have been doing more outreach to make sure that visibility has been built. I've managed to change the law from opposition. I've managed to change, get more support for certain disabled people quicker. That's something I'm pleased with. I'd like to have got, you know, because my background running a charity helping disabled people and carers, and my family background, I would genuinely like to have done more on our committee, Work and Pensions Select Committee investigations into things like universal credit and personal independence payment, which are causing a lot of damage in the constituency. And there was some good work being undertaken by the committee that's almost in a limbo period. If that work concluded, I think we'd have been able to secure some genuine results from the department. Since Ian Duncan Smith left the Department for Work and Pensions, there's been a bit more scope for ministers to be able to acknowledge the problems rather than just deny that there are any problems. And I think we already had a commitment from a minister that I secured in committee to keeping universal support open so that people in Southwark can get more help. And we were expecting this, what they're calling the landlord portal, so that people, you know, Leather Market, JMB, other housing associations can get more access to the stats and figures that make a difference on, that can prevent people ending up in arrears or ending up with mistaken income assessments. You know, big problems for hundreds and hundreds of people on a daily basis in Southwark, and that work's had to be put on hold until after the election.
And a lot, in terms of Brexit, many of the large-scale issues are well-known and well-rehearsed, but I know that you've raised on the floor of the House some of the specific local questions about the impact on local businesses and tourism that are very important in the north of the borough and around SE1. How do you see the situation for those kinds of businesses and organisations playing out from here?
Yeah, when you know, journalists and others have come to me, and whenever I've spoken in the House of Commons, I don't try and give Neil Coyle's view, as much as I might have one. I've tried to make sure, you know, especially where we've got people who on Brexit think there is this pot of gold over the rainbow. I don't believe it exists, and you know, people keep saying, oh, we can trade more with different countries. Well, Belgium trades more with China than us currently. There's nothing in EU rules that prevent us doing that. It's nonsense. So when there's been a chance to highlight evidence and existing problems, we have, I think, because of the nature of our bit of London, we feel the damage quicker and more acutely. So we've got businesses here who haven't extended or opened new premises in our bit of London. There's two companies open that have opened in Amsterdam or are in the process of opening Amsterdam on the back of the referendum result. We've seen that increase in hate crime. That's massively unfortunate. We know the police don't have the resources to tackle that as effectively as many local organisations and people would like. We've seen universities raise alarm bells about not just a drop in international student numbers and access to research funding, but what do they have to do longer term in terms of their budgets? And so there is this evidence base. It's the government is trying to ignore the costs and consequences of heading towards what could be a disastrous no deal arrangement and WTO rules. And we've got the businesses here, like at Borough Market, who not just import and potentially face new costs for the imports they're bringing, but are reliant on, if it's Brindisi, it's Spanish expertise, if it's Mamushko and others, it's Polish expertise. So they're already feeling some of those problems now, and that will get worse over the next 2 years. So I've been saying, you know, the facts haven't changed, my position hasn't changed, the consistency view seems fairly strong and consistently supportive of me in saying, why should any MP vote to back a deal from Theresa May at the end of 2 years that downgrades our country, puts the whole UK at risk if Scotland and Northern Ireland, you know, tensions persist, and future opportunity. And I go around the schools and colleges where there are 16, 17-year-olds who were denied a vote by this government who actually are incredibly angry and they're supportive of the position I've taken in standing up for our community.
Clearly the other big set of issues are around housing and regeneration and planning. How do you feel when you see homes, newly built homes in Bermondsey that your council colleagues have approved being put on the market in Malaysia or Hong Kong or sold other than to people looking to live in them and make their full-time homes in Southwark?
Housing is the number one issue for this constituency, and that is something I'd like to have done. You know, had the chance to be in government to do more about in trying to effect positive change. There's this blame game about what the council does. I find a bit disappointing because national planning law is national. The budget for homes and community agencies is set nationally. The Lib Dems had a chance nationally to make a difference on this and failed. They failed our community fundamentally. There's also some, you know, it's disingenuous when Lib Dems attack Labour record. There are buildings that have gone up here which Lib Dem councils have supported, and, you know, specifically which have had 5-6% affordable housing. It's a bit of a, you know, let's have the local election next year and then we'll see who comes out with more support for some of the policies. What I would like to see is a genuine partnership, a government investing, allowing the council to build the homes it knows it needs. We know Southwark Council has an ambitious house building programme. We know it hasn't met its target, sadly, yet, but rather they had an ambitious target and failed and had no target, like the Lib Dems when they ran the council with the Tories.
You say you'd like to have had the opportunity to influence some of these things in government. Mm. One of your regular refrains in this campaign has been that you say that you've kept your promise not to vote for anything that would harm people in this constituency. But that's quite arguably an easy thing to say from the luxury of opposition. But if you did find yourself in government, wouldn't that have to be about compromise and about sometimes finding a middle road that's not the one that you'd necessarily choose?
My promise is my promise. Whether I'm in government or not, and I hope to have the chance to be in government and have more, you know, the levers of control to effect positive change for our community, but that promise stays consistent. You'll never find me or any Labour MP voting for a bedroom tax. You know, these policies that were voted for by Labour, they weren't about compromise. You know, where was the compromise in saying 4,500 people in our bit of Southwark should pay £3,000 as they have to date, whilst people earning over £150,000 get a tax cut. That's a very, very poor compromise. But that's exactly what my predecessor did, and I will not make that mistake. And you say it's easy from opposition. Well, It's not. You know, I had a death threat because of how I voted on one issue against my, you know, party whip. And I've had, you know, a lot of pressure put on me by some of my front bench colleagues over certain positions. And I've gone out on a limb on Europe because I believe it's so important that, that I stand up for our community. So it might have looked easy. If I've made it look easy, then that's perhaps that says something else. But it hasn't. It hasn't been easy.
And you mentioned some tensions with your own party colleagues there. Clearly a lot's happened and changed in the Labour Party in those 2 years. You've played a part in the chain of events that led the Labour Party to the position where it has a leader who doesn't command the confidence of most of its members of Parliament. To the voter, prospective voter looking in, everyone always says that divided parties struggle to win. To someone looking at that state of affairs, how can you explain it and justify it?
Well, SE1, we all know the rationale for my nomination at the time. I backed Mary Cray. I made no secret of the fact that Mary Cray was the candidate I wanted. She would have been, you know, a more effective foil against back then David Cameron. So, you know, a non-London woman leader of our party would have been effective. But in this constituency, you also know, you know, if you're looking at party leaders, it's Jeremy Corbyn or Tim Farron. And I'm sorry, but a man who thinks that being gay is somehow still a sin and abortion is wrong is no good representative for our constituency.
You've been very vocal in the press over the last year, particularly in your criticism of Jeremy Corbyn and the party leadership. I think in order to win here, you're going to need the votes of Jeremy Corbyn supporters. How can you persuade people who support Jeremy Corbyn and find your stance as regards the party leadership unacceptable? Why should they turn up on Thursday and put their cross next to your name?
So I don't need to support people, you know, I don't need to convince them to come and campaign for me. They're here, whether they're back Jeremy Corbyn or anyone else in the Labour Party, whether they're here just for me. There are Lib Dem members who are supporting me here. There are Green Party members who've come out campaigning here. You know, and there are Labour parties from across our broad church who campaign here, because the bottom line is a Labour government has the best policies for this constituency. On housing, on education, on policing, on the NHS, on jobs and income, people know that Labour would be better for Southwark than the Tories. And that's what the fight is nationally. And actually, I think we're seeing here a shift, you know, in the national government as well as here, right here in this constituency, a shift back towards Labour or Tory, because people have had 7 years of Tory policies, one way or another, backed by Lib Dems in many cases, but 7 years of Tory-led policies that have not worked for our community.
I think people sometimes perhaps struggle to see kind of where your politics fit into the various strands of the Labour tradition. Which of the last five Labour Party leaders since Neil Kinnock would you say is closest to your own politics?
Have there been five? You could include an interim leader.
Well, Kinnock, Smith, Blair, Brown, Corbyn. You can Margaret Beckett and Harriet Harman.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, Harriet's obviously very close physically as well as and geographically as well as politically. But for me, it's not about. I mean, the Labour tradition isn't just those leaders. And if there's one man who deserves to be seen as an inspiration, it would be Attlee. Attlee's been the best leader for the Labour Party, in my opinion, not just in terms of the focus of his leadership, but the policies that we implemented. You know, that was a government at a time when we were told, you know, it was a time of austerity, there's no money, and look at the achievements of a Labour government in a time of austerity. The NHS, housing, the welfare state, those are Labour achievements under Attlee. We've had another time of austerity, arguably not as severe as post-war Britain, and Tories and Lib Dems voted for policies that undermined the legacy of Beveridge in particular. You know, have undermined the NHS, the fabric of the NHS, divided NHS and social care to an extent that was not being done previously. And on housing, it's completely unravelled. The Lib Dems and Tories in government cut the national budget for affordable housing by 83%, cut council budgets to prevent them building affordable housing. So, you know, in terms of who do I look to for inspiration, there's a whole collective of Labour leaders, but in particular Attlee.
And as a final question, during this campaign, what has come up? What issue has come up that surprised you? What thing have people raised with you that you didn't expect people to talk to you about?
there haven't been surprises in policy terms. The big issue, because, and don't forget, this isn't, you know, whilst maybe many members of the public will think, oh, they're out because it's election, they're knocking more doors. Our team here goes out every week. There is not a week since I was elected where I haven't been campaigning, unless I've been out of the country, family wedding or something. You know, there's not been a week where, you know, on a Sunday afternoon in Rollhide or a Saturday in Woolworth, where, or Bermondsey on a Tuesday even, you know, where the team isn't out and about. So we know what issues are coming up. Obviously, housing's a priority. Policing and safety, community safety issues comes up probably a lot more than people realise, because there are too many people out there who are having their mobile phones nicked and their bikes nicked, and it's not getting resolved by the police. Commercial burglaries has been something that's popped up. During the campaign, but well before, I was already working on it in one part, because it's popped up in another part during this campaign. So crime and policing is definitely something that people feel. Knife crime has obviously been, sadly we've had almost the second highest level of knife crime ever in the recent years in Southwark. So, you know, there's a big problem there that needs more of a focus and a strategy to tackle. But air quality also comes up far, far more than, and especially with younger people. I know lots of schools have done projects on this, and lots of cyclists will be well aware of some of the real problems you have. Elephant Castle has the worst air quality in South London, but it's not just limited there. I mean, Lower Road and Jamaica Road at certain times of day have toxic air quality, which I'm glad that Sadiq is looking at, but it's something that comes up far more than I think. If you to ask, you know, pollsters and journalists what are the top issues that you're going to hear on the doors, I think they would underestimate the amount of people who raise air quality.